What's good and welcome to the Hockey Mailbag, the first sports podcast run by you, the listeners. I'm your host, Brandon Rewicki, and each episode follows a simple format. You send me whatever hockey-related questions are on your mind, and I provide the answers. If you want to be a part of the podcast, just send your questions to hockeymailbag@gmail.com or to me on Twitter at Brandon_Rewicki. Hoo-wee, this is going to be a beauty of an episode. The hockey world is all fired up, and why wouldn't we be? I might get a Four Nations tat when this is all said and done. Almost a decade worth of waiting for Best on Best, and it succeeded every expectation, every reasonable expectation, at least, that I think we all had about this. And now we've got the final. I think everybody outside of Finland and Sweden wanted USA, Canada, round two. Let's go. We'll see if it lives up to the legendary opener that we saw Saturday night. But let's get right into it here. You guys brought it once again, unsurprisingly. So we got a bunch of questions to get to. The question master, Tyson Rewicki, is back as well. I know he tried his best to get to as many as we could here. Apologies if we couldn't fit everybody in. But yeah, people are fired up. There's a lot of topics we have to get into, so let's kick off the mailbag and get right into it here. So, Tyson, welcome back once again. And who do we have kicking off the latest Four Nations episode here?
It's great to be back. Great to be back. First off, we're going to go with Daryl. Daryl in Michigan. And Daryl says, admit it, Canada boy. The U.S. runs hockey now.
All right, Daryl. Why are we making four fights in 10 seconds? You want to drop the gloves, big boy? Let's go. I like the Canada boy. That's good. That's also a... Hey, man, you do you, but I don't know if I'd be trying to bring any bad juju ahead of the championship game. That might have been a question you wait till after it's all said and done. Here's what I will say about the U.S.-Canada... What do we want to call this? Power rankings? Who sits atop the totem pole? Things like that. And we probably should preface this, you know. Obviously, being Canadian myself, I have a slightly different take on the matter than Daryl might. But I'll say this. From a Canadian side, unfortunately, we've officially reached the point where Canada versus USA in hockey, best on best, is a 50-50 proposition. They're just two evenly matched teams, and there's not a whole lot separating the skaters out there. Obviously, the gulf in net is something Canada is going to have to figure out very soon if they want to make this, a much different outcome than what we saw on Saturday night. But this isn't the same thing as 2010 in Vancouver in the Olympics there. This isn't 02 in Salt Lake City, right? Where I'm not going to name names and disparage any Olympians, right? But Canada can't feast on the bottom of the American roster like they used to. That's completely gone. The top of the U.S. talent pool matches up, maybe not shot for shot, but pretty damn close right now. Right? Like they're deeper, the Americans are, and they're more talented than they've ever been. And it's just the harsh reality as a Canadian here. But I don't think it's this grand, the Americans are here and they've completely taken hockey away from Canada. Daryl, I might pump the brakes a little bit and wait until Thursday night comes to an end. It's a shame we couldn't do the podcast, push it a day later here, but the powers that be, Thursday morning. Comes out every Thursday, so that's what we'll do here. But I just don't get the sense after watching the U.S. play an exceptional game against Canada that this was the beginning of a dawn of American domination in hockey. It's just these things are going to come down to deflections, to blocks, to luck. A lot more of those intangibles are going to come into play as opposed to can the Americans pull off the underdog role against Canada. I just think it's a coin flip for the next probably dozen or so years. And then we can investigate whether or not this is officially an American sport now. But thanks for kicking us off with some with a little bit of a temperature check on that one, Daryl. So appreciate that. Who's next, Tyson?
Well, before we get into our next one, I just want to say 9-0 Canada on Thursday.
Oh, sorry, Daryl. Stop it. Don't be stupid.
Moving on. Next up, we got Darth Bill. And Darth Bills asks, what was the main reason that the U.S. beat Canada?
All right. Well, thanks for the question, Darth Bill. I can't tell if you're an American or a Canadian. That was a very reasonable take. So you're coming in a little more a little more on the level than the last one there. I think most people might point to that game and kind of like what I said earlier there and say, well, this is what you get when it's Hellebuck versus Binnington. There's a kernel of truth in that. But to me, the main reason that the U.S. beat Canada isn't goaltending, because look, Binnington needs to stop that first goal, the Gensel goal, no doubt about it. But that, whether he does or doesn't change the fact that Canada only had one goal, which was a superhuman effort by Connor McDavid. And there weren't it wasn't Hellebuck standing on his head type of a night. The main reason the U.S. beat Canada on Saturday is that John Tortorella might have painted his masterpiece. I know he's not the head coach, but you cannot tell me if you've been a Rangers fan, a Flyers fan, a Lightning fan, maybe not a Canucks fan, but all the stops that he's been to, that was a absolute Tortorella coach defensive Picasso to a T. That U.S. team defended. That might have been the best defensive performance I've seen from a team outside of Canada's Olympic run in 2014. It might have been right up there with that. Like it was flawless. They gave Canada nothing in the middle of the ice. They made Canada dump every puck in through the neutral zone. They made them work for every single inch of ice. And I thought outside of Connor McDavid, nobody on Team Canada had any real major offensive impact in that game. Nathan MacKinnon was ghosted. Sidney Crosby was invincible outside of a terrible turnover that led to the game-winning goal. Mitch Marner, Sam Reinhart, you go up and down that lineup. There was nothing. And that's going to be the intriguing thing for me in the final here is, you know, is Canada willing to get a little more muck and grind and dirty as opposed to trying to find those cross-ice seams that just weren't there in that game, right? I get trying it for maybe the first period, but after that, it wasn't there. And if they're going to take away those types of plays, you've only got one solution there, and that's to get a little bit dirty. And Canada didn't do it in that first game. And I think that's going to be the main difference when these two teams go at it on Thursday night. So thank you for the question there, Mr. Darth Bill. Let's keep it going, Tice. Who we got next?
Next up, we got Beantown Bobby. And Beantown Bobby says, should Quinn Hughes have been able to join the USA?
Yes. Yes. Why is this even a debate? The NHL just... I guess for those that maybe don't know, because it happened Wednesday afternoon, evening-ish, but Quinn Hughes, quote-unquote, was not medically cleared by the Canucks to play. I'll put the tinfoil hat on there, and I say that's a bunch of bullcrap. I think he is medically cleared to play, and this is the NHL's way of avoiding their version of a geopolitical disaster on their hands here. But let's say for argument's sake, he is medically cleared. Yes. the NHL has, they've gotten so lucky and so much good press with this tournament. And it's been a grand slam double decker home run for them. But this is also just another example of how they can't get out of their own way. This is a made up tournament. this is not the regular season or the playoffs. The injury rules can be modified and need to be modified in situations like this. And the other part of it too is Quinn Hughes, I believe, was one of the first five or six named to this team. Quinn Hughes was named to the roster. The only reason he couldn't play was because of injury, right? So it's not like you're calling somebody that wasn't even selected to begin with to join the team here. It's a guy that's, because of injury, being given an opportunity to kind of get back his rightful place. It's ridiculous. This whole injury thing has been just an absolute cluster, you know what, from the NHL. Starting with Thomas Harley almost not even getting a chance to go to Montreal for the game on Saturday. And then what ended up happening? He needed to play in that game. Like Canada almost played a defenseman short because of bureaucratic reason. Like, there's no, it's just so, it's so, so dumb. It could have been avoided, by the way, making these rosters two extra players bigger, like one more forward, one more defenseman. But no, the NHL couldn't. Oh, no, no, no. We have rules. This is a tournament. This is a big deal. We need to go by the book. But they don't do that when, hey, a 15-year contract was signed by, you know, the Kovalchuk of the Devils. We approved it. Ah, we're going to retroactively punish you. Right? Like, the NHL just loves the, like, that we got rules. We got to follow them. Ah, actually, we're not going to follow them. You get punished. You get punished. You don't. The fact that Quinn Hughes, if he was medically cleared, would not have been able to play for Team USA is a complete farce and a joke. And I mean, again, the main thing is, like, who wouldn't want to see it? Best on best. Have the best there. It's a shame. It's a shame it didn't happen. But I guess, fortunately, for the NHL's sake, he wasn't medically cleared, so they don't have to worry about this being an issue. But thanks for the question there. Once again, let's keep it going. What's up next?
Next up is the divine maple syrup Moses. Maple Syrup Moses says, will Hockey Canada finally be taken to task for their archaic roster building strategies?
Well, thanks for the question, Divine Syrup Boy or Man. I'm glad somebody brought this up because I think it's a bunch of bullcrap. What are the archaic strategies that Canada did in this tournament? Like, who would you have brought differently than what Canada did? I see so many people saying, well, Cooper loves his Tampa Bay boys. Like, it's the only reason that they're there right now is to get those guys in the lineup. Brandon Hagel is on pace for 95 points this year, and he plays all situations. He is a legitimate superstar talent. Anthony Cirelli has a case for the Selke Trophy. Braden Point, we don't have to argue Braden Point. But you know what I mean? Canada brought basically, I think it was up front, 10 of their top 12 point scorers are on the team. The only real big snubs up front were probably Mark Scheifele and Tom Wilson, maybe, when you talk about like the physical element. And I would have put Scheifele over Jarvis for sure. I think Scheifele got snubbed. But it's not like Team Canada went full on, we're going to have a bottom six of muckers and grinders out there, right? Like, they brought a ton of freaking talent. It's completely different than what they did with the World Juniors team. Same on the back end. Like, yeah, you could make some debates and arguments, but it's about like the third pairing guys, right? Like the 5, 6, 7 defensemen. Canada brought all their best skaters to this tournament. I don't see the same issues with the World Junior team that plagues this Team Canada club that we're going to watch, one last time on Thursday night. The goaltending, well, maybe you got me there. But I don't think that's necessarily archaic. It's just, you know, everybody's going to have a different, I guess, debate or opinion or standard on what constitutes the best goalie. But when you talk about building a roster, there's maybe one or two changes I would make, but it's at the bottom of the roster, right? And when you get down there, it's pretty difficult. That's where the hard decisions have to happen. So I completely kind of disagree with that. I think Canada did a good job of sending a good team out there. These just kind of get amplified when they lose a big game to the U.S. But let's give credit to the Americans more so than I think blame towards who built Team Canada. Like, the U.S. just played a hell of a game. Canada can rectify things pretty quickly with a win on Thursday night, and then we don't have these takes. But no, I disagree. Thanks for the question, but I don't see it that way.
Yeah, well, next up, you mentioned a little bit about the goaltending situation and how you would do things. And our next question coming from Xavier in Montreal. He mentions, after watching 3 games, would you do anything differently with how Canada handled the goalies, whether that's at the start from the roster selection all the way up to Binnington starting every game?
Okay. Well, I just praised Team Canada for their roster building, but they got the goaltending wrong. Here's what I would say. As far as selection goes, I think it was extremely short-sighted not to bring your 2 best performing goalies this season. I think with the way that the current Canadian goaltending crop is set up, that it was much, much more important to go with who's playing the best right now, as opposed to any sort of pedigree argument. So I think Canada did themselves a disservice by not bringing Logan Thompson and Mackenzie Blackwood as two of their three goalies. I think it was a mistake. I think I would have picked Jordan Binnington as well. I think his numbers don't look as good for St. Louis because they don't offer the same level of support. But I kind of like, I think they should have brought one of Binnington or Hill. I think it would have been important to have some level of experience. And both of those guys have won a cup, obviously. But I think Logan Thompson and Mackenzie Blackwood deserved it with how they played. I think I would have started Logan Thompson game one. And then if that didn't go well, then you make the decision to go back to Binnington. But to me, Thompson Blackwood deserved to make it. As far as how Canada did it once they picked their goalies, I think I would have went Aiden Hill in game three against Finland. I think I would have done it. But I also kind of get, you know, from the coaching perspective there, like to throw a guy in cold in an absolute must-win game, like that's kind of a tough card to throw your tendy there. So I understand at that point why they did that. And the other thing too is maybe they were thinking, you know, big winner-take-all game in Boston. I wonder if any of our goalies have had success in a similar type of game like that before. Oh, hey, Jordan, how's it going? Nice Stanley Cup ring. How'd you get that one? I wonder if that played into it at all. Maybe looking ahead a little bit to that final game there. But I think Binnington deserved to be on the team, but I don't think he would have been my starter going into the tournament. But appreciate the question once again. Xavier, right? That was Xavier? Yeah. Thanks, Xavier. All right, let's keep it going. A few more to here before we wrap it up.
Heading on over to Ernie. And Ernie says, no Bert, I don't know what your stance is on fighting, but did the three fights in 9 seconds in the U.S.-Canada game change your stance one way or the other?
Yes, I want blood all the time. No. No, I mean, but like, I think John Cooper said it best. Maybe I'll paraphrase a bit, but I didn't see anybody walking to the exits once those fights were going on. And, you know, I was watching that one at home, and the first fight was like, come on, this is amazing. Number two was like, oh, we got a beauty. And then the third one, it's just like, I'm looking for somebody to throw down. Like, I'm looking out my door if a neighbor's out there. I got a big husky. I was like, do you want to go? So it was amazing. There's just no other way to put it. It was amazing. And I guess as far as my stance on fighting in the NHL, and I'll say just the NHL because I think it's different outside of the NHL. But with the NHL, I think the NHL is in a good spot now with fighting where they've pretty much gotten rid of the stage fighting with the goons. You know what I mean? Like the guys that just, they weren't able to keep up. They don't play hockey at the same level as even the second or third liners in the league these days. Like, I think those days are gone. There's heavyweights in the league, no doubt, but for the most part, even those guys can chip in with like, what, 10 goals a year, 5-10 goals. So I think at least in that sense, I'm okay with that. But I mean, when you get the best of the best in pure passion going toe to toe, that's peak entertainment, right? Like, is it a little gladiatorial and maybe primitive? Yeah. But I don't know. Sometimes you just got to have a little red meat. You know what I mean? Like, too much of a good thing, I can understand that being a bit too much, but I was jacked up. Sorry. It was awesome. Everybody watching it loved it. I don't think we'll see fights in the championship game, though. You agree with that, Tyson?
I mean, never say never, but I agree with you. I think the focus is going to be a little bit more.
Touché. I just think at this point there's too much. The same way you very rarely see fights deep in the NHL playoffs. I just think like it's too big a game, too important. Maybe more so guys don't want to sit for 5 minutes and not play. I don't think we'll see the same fireworks. I don't even know if it would be as cool as the somewhat impromptu bouts that we saw on Saturday night. But yeah, look, the NHL is trying to do a thing here where they stand amongst the other four major sports, maybe five major sports in North America, and that's their one big calling card over every other sport that exists right now. And I get there's a bunch of other maybe, you know, medical and ethical issues surrounding fighting there, but There's no doubt it's been a part of the game since it first started. But if it comes down to it and you have the best of the best in bouts of passion, if you will, I can live with that. Hey, so thank you for the question there. A few more here to go.
You want passion fights, not you don't want to force fights. Just like
I was gonna say too, like we don't like stage fights, but then the first two were about a stage, like pretty much as stage as it gets, right? Well, you have a group chat before, but I think this is just a completely different animal than anything else we've really ever seen, right? So I'm fine with what we saw there. I think most people are as well.
Yeah, I know. Well, next question up though, it's coming from the Big Rig. Speaking of fighting and toughness, Big Rig 42 is chiming in here with the question. And the Big Rig wants to know, if you could take one player all time to suit up for each team in the final, Canada and the US, who would you take and why?
Oh, so you get any like legend to put in?
Yeah.
One each? Oh, come on. Patrick Waugh, Jeremy Roenick, baby. You want this to get a little more heated? Come on. What are we even doing here? That's an easy one. I think it might actually be those two, legitimately. I mean, Canada obviously needs a goalie, right? Or a legendary goalie. And, I mean, you could make your case for anyone, really. But, I mean, yeah. For me, Patrick Waugh over Martin Brodeur is an easy one. Even with Brodeur saving Canada's ass in 2002. But, yeah, Patty Waugh, no doubt about it. And then when you look at the American, like, man, the Americans just don't have many holes. Maybe the only one would be like that third line pivot after Eichel and Matthews. Right? So, and Rona kind of gives you a little bit of what the Kachucks do. Like, he fits in with the identity of this, the DNA of this American team. I like that. I would go with Rona and Patty Waugh there. And then we could see if there's anything plugging anyone's ear at the end of the tournament.
I think you missed an obvious one for the States.
Okay.
I mean, it's Keith.
Tyson. Ah, that's so bad. Even though nobody plays center between the three of the Kachuk boys, how could I miss? Big Rig. Big Rig was right there. Big Walt. That's fair. That's fair. I was going to say Dustin Byfuglien too, like just to cause like complete physical mayhem.
That's not a bad one.
But yeah, Big Walt. I should have picked Big Walt. That's fair. If I could do a redo, Big Walt, and you get the Kachuk trio, and instead of Patrick Waugh, Ron Hextall in net for Team Canada, so we at least get a goalie-on-goalie fight as well to go along with the 3 and 9 seconds there. That would be my redo of who suits up between the two teams all time. Oh, that's too much beef. The three Kachucks together. I don't know. conditioning could be a factor late in the game. That's all I'll say with those three. But that would be fun. That would be a good one. I love the question there. Beauty. All right. I think we got three more to get to here. The laptop is at 28%, and we're getting near that 30-minute mark, so we got to try to pick it up a little bit. So let's push through here at the end. Tice, who do we got next?
Next up, we got Ball Up Top, one of the most viral tweets from 2024. If you know, you know. I don't know if you know Brandon.
I don't know. So, but
hopefully someone out there does. Yeah. But they had simple question. Give me a hot take for the tourney.
Okay. Yeah. Simple, but I will say this. Speaking of misses on my part, I was texting with a buddy before the tournament. And I actually said that I thought Brady Kachuk was the most overrated forward in the NHL. After watching him in two games, I'm like, okay, I'll own it. Mea culpa. That was a bad take on my part. I don't know where this lies on the take scale. Like, you know, is it a 10 on the take quake? But I'll say that after Connor McDavid and Nathan MacKinnon, I would pick Jack Eichel as the third best center in the NHL. And if there was a draft, to win a Stanley Cup or a regular season draft, whatever it might be, I would go Eichel over Barkov and Matthews.
Ooh, wow.
There's just, I know how good he is. I kind of still think Jack Eichel is maybe the most underrated player in the NHL. He doesn't seem to get credit, but like he sets the tempo when he's out there. Defensively, he's as good as they come down the middle. Offensively, he's kind of taken that big leap that people have been waiting for. And I thought he was the best player when Vegas won the Stanley Cup. I think up front, I know the Tkachuks have stolen the show, and rightfully so. But I just think Eichel stirs the drink. I think, you know, Matthews being a little injured this year and some questions about how he performs in the clutch, no such things with Jack Eichel. So that would be my hot take. I got Eichel at number 3 in the NHL for centerman.
Interesting. Him and Barkov's a close one.
That's a completely fair take. Barkov's a beauty too. All right, let's keep it going. Who's up next?
We have Stephen A. Smith's burner account. Do you think it's actually Stephen A. Smith or?
No, because I don't think Stephen A. Smith knows what a hockey mailbag is, let alone. I've seen his segments on First Take. When they have to talk about hockey, he kind of passes the buck pretty quickly there. But well, I'll bite. Let's hear what he has to say.
Because it is a basketball kind of driven question.
LeBron or McDavid?
I wish. But after Canada and U.S. stole the spotlight from NBA during their All-Star weekend, how far apart are the two leagues in your mind?
Yes. This was every hockey fan's wet dream that Canada-U.S. absolutely curb-stomped the NBA over the weekend. Like, even diehard NBA fans were like, yeah, you got us on this one. This is awesome. It was for years. It would be like, watch my sport, love my sport. And finally, it's like the whole world did, and they understood what hockey's all about. And then you had Victor Wembanyama throwing like 500 balls at the net, trying to game a skills comp. Mac McClung hasn't played a minute in the NBA in his life. Again, the whole thing was just a complete curb stomping by the NHL. But I would caution, there's two things I would say here. I would caution people in thinking that just because the NHL had a good weekend, that these two sports are in the same stratosphere as far as like the American public is concerned. Like, there's some good things that the NHL is going to is doing, and there's a potential. I'll talk about that in a sec. But if you look at just the cold hard numbers, I think this was last year's numbers. But the NBA brings in just under $9 billion in revenues. The NHL, $5 billion in revenues. I believe this is like gate-driven. Attendance-wise, 18K for the NBA, 17 for the NHL. So pretty similar there, actually. Let's check the TV deals. Oh, my Lord. The NBA, $76 billion. The NHL, $4 billion. I mean, that, like, there's clearly that's a gargantuan gap between the two. And there's, I think, a reason that as far as advertising dollars go, that people are more willing to put some of that towards the NBA than the NHL. And I think people also maybe underestimate just how big the NBA audience is compared to hockey. Like, it was a great weekend, but the NBA is still, even in a down year for them, in a different stratosphere than the NHL. But this is absolutely something the NHL needs to build on in a massive, massive way. I think they can close the gap. I think right now it's still way too big, but this is where the NHL needs to put their foot on the gas. Like, don't let up here. Market the number 2 out of the league over the next couple of months, especially. And you know what I would love to see maybe more than anything, Tice? Like, what does the NHL, like, I would take this out of the equation here. Because next year, for example, the NHL isn't going to have a best-on-best all-star weekend tournament. It's probably going to suck. So, like, all that momentum is going to go out the wayside. But what does the NHL have right now in a big, big way over the NBA? I would argue that the regular season games matter way more, and the start of the playoffs matter way, way more. The NBA does kind of give a bit of a beat down to the NHL by the time the finals come around, if you look at the numbers there. But like, Mark, call the first round of the playoffs. This is the best 2 weeks in sports. Right? Like, just market the hell out of the start. Because it really is true. Like, there's nothing like it. And if you can maybe push people on that and get them tuned in right at the start and get them invested, that might be a great opportunity to kind of build it out after that. So I think the NHL can build on a lot of this, but there's still I think they're still pretty far apart, unfortunately. But thanks for the question on that. SAS. All right. Tyson, I'm down to 16%. Two more to go. Let's do it.
Two more quickly. This one's from Mike Davis. Mike Davis just asks, how much concern is there with Elias Pettersson now?
Ooh, a lot. I say this as I mentioned in an earlier episode. Unfortunately, I'm a Flyers fan. So as somebody from a team that is beyond desperate for a number one center, I don't know if you can touch Elias Pettersson right now. I have major concerns. So it's rare, but sometimes, and I think it's injury more so than anything mental with him right now, that the knee tendonitis thing scares the crap out of me. He just looks like a completely different player. Like, he's just nowhere near the level of the rest of the players in that tournament. That he might have been the worst player in the tournament. I think if I'm a team looking to acquire him, it's going to be at rock bottom prices. Like, I don't know how anybody trying to get him would want to give up anything of value right now. And then I don't know if you're the Canucks, like how you feel confident about him being kind of the face of the franchise along with Quinn Hughes moving forward. Like, it is scary. I think if you're Vancouver, you at least have some time here to, like, let's see how the rest of this season goes, and then we can reassess afterwards. But 9 out of 10 for sure on the concern scale with Pettersson. I'd be very, very worried about him getting back to that 100-point level that we saw a few years ago, for sure. One more to go. I'm assuming we get Sweden. I'm assuming Finland's next.
Last one comes from Patty the Batty 29.
Oh, Patty the Batty.
And Patty the Batty says, would Miro Heiskanen and Rasmus Ristolainen have pushed Finland to the finals?
Well, let me say this first, Patty the Batty. I think Patrick Laine's got his swagger back. Oh. I liked watching Laine play. He's a guy maybe kind of in the Pettersson mold, I guess, but like, where if you get him in the right headspace and he's comfortable with the team he's on, like, he's a game breaker. I really enjoyed watching him in this tournament. It sounds harsh, but no. Like, yeah, Finland's a hard out, though. Like, they've always been difficult to deal with in international play, but I don't know, it just felt like there was a pretty big gap between the Americans and the Canadians when they went head to head. I know it was tight for two periods against the Americans, but you could see the level of talent kind of separate as that third period moved along there. And despite the madness that was the final 2 minutes, Canada pretty comfortably held Finland at bay. Like, that was a little bit of child's play-ish during that game. And as great as Heiskanen is, and Risto would have been an improvement over some of the defensemen the Finns had there, I don't think it was enough. You know, they needed a little more net. Saros is just having the year from hell. And maybe just another line up front. I think up front might have made a bigger difference for them, even though Heiskanen is as great as he is. But no reason to hang your head if you're the Finns. Like, they came to play. I thought Sweden played good too. Like, I don't think any team actually played all that bad. Just only two teams can go on, and that's the way the cookie crumbles here. But Finland's fun. I love watching the Finns play. But thanks for the question there, Patty. I think Laine's gonna have a great second half too, or unofficial second half, once this tournament comes to an end here. But the tournament will come to an end soon. What will come to an end is the episode here, as I officially have low battery on the laptop. So we do have to call it quits there. But we will get set for an absolute beauty of a final matchup, and then the rest of the NHL season kicking into high gear when we get back at it for next week's episode. For now, thank you so much for tuning in to this episode of the Hockey Mailbag. As always, appreciate getting to hang out with you beauties and talk some puck. Make sure to subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. And if you want to be a part of the podcast, send your questions to hockeymailbag@gmail.com or to me on Twitter at @Brandon_Rowicki. We'll be back at it next week, Thursday morning, talking the final of the Four Nations and the push for the NHL regular season. But until then, I'm your host, Brandon Rowicki, and we look forward to talking puck with you guys again real soon.